Call to order the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. Colleagues, today is February 9th, 2015. We're convened for the purposes of a public hearing on Senate Bill 5506, the budget bill for the Criminal Justice Commission. Linda, why don't you tee it up for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your materials on OLIS today include the LFO presentation, the agency's presentation, and the Department of Administrative Services presentation. Also, just to briefly introduce the LFO presentation, there's a table at the top where you will see that general fund is rising significantly from the 11-13 actuals of $4.7 million to governor's budget of $73.5 million, and there will be plenty more discussion about that later. I would also point out that federal funds, having started at $16.4 million in 11-13, including some stimulus funds, have fallen in governor's budget to $1.6 million, and that would be a result of the House Bill 3194 spend down that was directed in 13-15. And that is all I have for the LFO part, so agency can go.
Great. Why don't we bring up Mike Schmidt and Art Heyer, please. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee on Public Safety. My name is Mike Schmidt, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission.
Mr. Chair, can I say
yes,
one thing?
Representative.
Congratulations, Mike, on your permanent appointment to your position.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The mission statement of the Criminal Justice Commission is laid out in statute. As many of you know, it's our goal to be the impartial forum of public safety policy work in the state. Our commissioners are appointed by the governor, by the Speaker of the House, and by the Senate President. They are appointed for two terms. In total, we have nine commissioners. This slide shows our current agency staff. Right now, we have 7.5 FTE, including myself. We are actively interviewing to fill the Justice Reinvestment Liaison position and hope to have it filled by the end of this month so that we can be back to full staff of 8.5. The governor's requested budget includes an enhancement of 2.5 FTE. Those are represented by the green boxes on the slides. In order to fully support implementation of the Justice Reinvestment work that we do, in the last biennium, the Justice Reinvestment was a formula grant that went out to the counties. All 36 counties received their funding by January of 2014. However, in this next biennium, the grant process will be competitive, and there will be regular monitoring and reporting that takes place. So it will include a lot more activity for the agency to implement the grant program. The six areas that the CJC oversees include Justice Reinvestment and Specialty Courts. That is the bulk of our grant work. Also, sentencing and policy development, as well as statistical analysis and asset forfeiture. Many of you will recall the four major goals of House Bill 3194, the Justice Reinvestment legislation. We track each of these. So starting with recidivism, House Bill 3194 redefined recidivism. Right now, the Criminal Justice Commission is in the process of tracking this and figuring out how to do it across public safety agencies statewide, and we plan on reporting that out as soon as possible. The short-term transitional leave program, one of the more significant sentencing changes. It's had the largest impact on our prison usage of all the changes in House Bill 3194. And this is the change that lengthened the 30-day trans leave to 90 days of trans leave that the offenders will spend serving out the rest of their sentence in the community as opposed to in Department of Corrections. Even since I prepared these slides, they are outdated, so the new numbers today, and I can submit these, are 1,378 offenders have served some portion of the final 90 days of their sentence in the community rather than in a Department of Corrections facility. Of those, 1,378.60 have been returned to Department of Corrections, which is roughly 4.4%. So it's been hugely successful from that point of view. Of those returns, the majority of those are for technical violations and not new crimes. And of those who have been returned for new crimes, it's been largely related to drugs possession. Before we go one more, on the second part of the short-term trans leave, this chart should be updated to, as of today, we have saved 42,383 prison bed days while consuming 1,075 local jail days, or the offset is about 2.5% of change from DOC to state, local, county jail bed. So decreased utilization of Department of Corrections. Here I wanted to highlight the RIC meetings. We call these the Regional Implementation Councils. The Criminal Justice Commission has tracked prison usage across the state by regions and by county. Quarterly, we convene in all of our four regions, and we host a presentation where we invite members from each of the local public safety coordinating councils to attend. And in those, we share the information of the prison usage. To date, we've held those meetings in Baker County, Harney County, Crook County, Jackson, Josephine, Coos, Yamhill, Tillamook, Astoria, and as well as in the metro region. So we're really getting out into the counties and not just staying locally in Salem. And we've really resisted the urge to keep these conversations in Salem and do them over a webinar or something like that, because you really don't get the quality of conversation. And it allows people from different LPSCs, the Public Safety Coordinating Councils, to meet with other LPSC members to kind of coordinate and see how these challenges have impacted different counties. So when we do a Regional Implementation Council meeting, a RIC meeting, a lot of our information looks a lot like this. And this is our statewide intake utilization of Department of Corrections. We break out the sentencing data across all the crime categories, look at it, we cut it up by intakes, by revocations, by average length of stay. We look at total prison months consumed. And we do this, like I said, not only statewide, but on a county by county basis. You'll see from this slide that in all of the areas that House Bill 3194 targeted, which is identity theft, driving while suspended, robbery in the third degree, the marijuana crimes, and the all other drug or Measure 57 drug crimes, in every one of those areas, we've seen a decrease in prison intakes, which is remarkable. And this slide is one that I think most of you are familiar with, essentially the report card of justice reinvestment. This shows that in the 15-17 biennium, the Department of Corrections will not have to open the second half of Deer Ridge and will not have to begin planning for and even begin construction of a new prison in Junction City. If you follow that green line, which is where we were forecasted to go before the changes in House Bill 3194 took effect, you see that in 2014, we would have been on track to open the second half of Deer Ridge, and by the end of this biennium, Junction City would need to be having construction begun. In 2013, or in this biennium, DOC would be requesting funds for both of those. The orange line shows our current trajectory. For the first time in over a decade, Oregon prison population growth has been flat and even declined for a sustained amount of time. Tomorrow, Director Peters will come here before you to talk more about the impacts of these projections on the DOC budget and how what those costs avoided would be and how far out into the future we think that we will not have to even open the second half of Deer Ridge. Public safety is another one of the four major areas of House Bill 3194. And here, the Criminal Justice Commission has focused on good data collection. It continues to be a challenge. We used our rules to try to incentivize jurisdictions to collect more data and report more frequently through our rules. However, many jurisdictions do not have the technological capacity as well as the human resources to make data collection a priority. We recognize that in order to determine if we are having a positive effect on public safety, We need to be able to measure a lot more than just prison usage and recidivism. We need to be able to combine those with population growth, with reported crimes, with arrest rates, with conviction rates, with victimization information, and also with the racial and ethnic impacts of our sentencing in our system. In addition to our data collection for public safety, the Criminal Justice Commission does outcome evaluations of programs that we fund. Just this past summer that we released a study on our Measure 57 drug courts. That study shows a 10% drop in recidivism as compared to the probation as usual group. So we believe that over the course of the 3 years, once we have all the recidivism data, we will show a significant area of effect for that intervention for drug courts. And that's the kind of outcome analysis that we'll continue to do. The fourth pillar, if you will, of justice reinvestment was to hold offenders accountable. All counties have been doing this, but there's little data to track how various counties do it in different ways. Through the grant rules, we've tried to incentivize counties to start tracking those, which we believe is information that is not only of interest to the public to help legitimize public safety that they're doing the good work, but also could prove valuable as we study interventions to see how they have impacts on recidivism. And this shows over the course of House Bill 3194, the work that CJC has been doing in coordination with the Public Safety Task Force and various subcommittees. So justice reinvestment has been a major focus of our work this past biennium. But at the same time, we do a lot of work with drug courts. In 2013-15, we invested $12.7 million into 34 different courts across the state, including 22 adult drug courts, 4 family courts, 2 mental health courts, and a veterans court. To do that, we used general fund money, federal money, and proceeds from the asset forfeiture. Yep. Continuing, House Bill 3194 charged the Criminal Justice Commission with developing best practices across specialty courts. To do that, we've been working with the Chief Justice to promote those standards, and we believe we'll have that completed soon. We're also very pleased with our peer review program. Our staff trains drug court practitioners from around the state, so judges, court coordinators, probation officers, and treatment providers, on how to look at other drug court programs. Our staff then travels with them to the other adult drug courts in the state, and they prepare reports that ultimately will be transmitted to the court as feedback. It also has the added benefit of getting drug court professionals in our state visiting other jurisdictions in order to take some things that they see back into their own courts. It's been a very popular program with CJC. It's really facilitated a lot of information sharing amongst the counties that operate these types of courts. And we're thinking about ways to adapt this to House Bill 3194 as we fund counties. Policy planning and development is another area the Criminal Justice Commission focuses on. So this goes to us planning. We do the performance evaluations of programs. As of January 1st, 2015, we have filled our Economist 4 vacancy with a criminologist who is helping us build our capacity to do cost-benefit analysis work, which is something 3194 tasked us with. She also brings considerable expertise to doing evaluations and being able to get into the research and can be a resource for counties who are trying to figure out how to do things according to best practices. Sentencing guidelines, the work that we have to do with this is monitoring what comes out of the legislature around criminal legislation. We adopt new rules as required and rank the bills according to crime seriousness. We are the Statistical Analysis Center for the state. If you know Kelly Officer from my office, she's our director, which means among all the various things that she's working on at any time, she also attends annual conferences and is in touch with professionals around the country who are doing these same kinds of challenges. So it's not uncommon for her to pick up the phone and call Pennsylvania or to call another area to see how they are kind of trying to tackle some of the same problems that we are. And finally, the sixth program area of our commission, we're in charge of staffing the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee. The funds that come to CJC from this committee are used for both that committee's administration and the balances invested into our drug court programs. Our first key performance measure.
Just a moment, Representative Whitsitt.
Thank you. There's no Whitsitt here.
It's been a while.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, the 454,000 of drug courts, does that meet all their needs, or does that provide for additional courts, or and is that a continuing? How we're going to, is that what we expect to get each budget is half a million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, that is one small portion of our total drug court investment. The majority comes from the federal funds that we receive and the general fund. So that is a kind of one-time spend down of what we've accumulated in asset forfeiture.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our first key performance measure, customer service. We sent out a survey to our grantees and asked for feedback. They ranked us on about 10 different metrics, and you can see we scored very highly with their satisfaction. The second way of evaluating was that the money we were allocating was actually serving the intended populations at the numbers that we anticipated it serving. And so you can see that the majority of our grants met this standard of going for to who we thought it would go to the number of people that we thought it would.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Williamson.
Mike, do you know which programs didn't meet that KPM, and can you talk a little bit more about what the challenges were?
Madam Chair, we do have that broken out. I can submit that to you. I'll also do the same with what the challenges of why they didn't meet those.
Thank you.
And Mike, could you please get that to the professional staff and we'll distribute it to all the members?
Absolutely.
Thanks.
The 10% reduction option for general fund, we applied to special payments. As we're a very small agency, 10% of our current service level would go to these special payments that would be passed through to the counties through the Justice Reinvestment Program. And that concludes my presentation.
Very timely. We're going to allow everybody who's here to testify for a little bit longer because of your concision. Appreciate it. Questions? All right, Bam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will load up my presentation. For the record, my name is Art Ayer. I'm with the Chief Financial Office, and I am here to give a brief presentation on the governor's budget for the Criminal Justice Commission. As the agency said, they are implementing the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, and Mike also mentioned the cost-benefit model, which I had a presentation done for me, and Linda did as well, on this called Results First. Very impressive. So looking forward to the implementation of that. The 10-year plan for the state has a public safety vision of Oregonians are safe and secure wherever they live, work, and play, and this agency helps achieve that through increasing public safety through effective sentencing and criminal justice programs, and that results first model I think will help with that as well. Looking at the recent history of the agency's budget, we have the 2011-13 actuals on the left, the 2013-15 legislatively approved through December in the middle, and then the governor's budget on the right. And you can see, obviously, the green increasing very dramatically, the general fund increasing very dramatically. And the major portion of the increase between the current biennium and the governor's is that Justice Reinvestment Initiative investment. I should also mention that the rather small blue portion at the top in the governor's budget, $1.6 million of federal funds, is actually smaller than it should be. In developing the budget, there was a misunderstanding as to what we should include for existing federal grants that are continuing into the future, and so that's a technical adjustment. We will need to add about $5.7 million worth of limitation for federal funds for continuing federal grants in the 15-17 biennium. This graph shows revenues over actually a longer period of time, back to 2003-05 biennium. And you can see the very large influx of federal funds in the 2009-11 biennium, largely, as I understand it, ARRA funding that was intended to last over a period of years and be spent down over a period of years. The investments that are proposed in the governor's budget include $5 million, and actually, I think this is really a little bit of my mistake. at the top bullet here, I say $5 million general fund for specialty courts. In the current biennium, we actually used some general fund for justice reinvestment instead of specialty courts, and so this actually should say justice reinvestment instead of specialty courts. So there was a spend down of federal funds that resulted in a federal fund shortfall for next biennium. It needs to be backfilled, and that would make the Justice Reinvestment Initiative whole from that amount. Also, the governor's budget provides $43.5 million of general fund for justice reinvestment. The total amount proposed or projected to be saved by House Bill 3194 in the 2015-17 biennium is just under $58.5 million. That's an estimate or a projection done by the Department of Corrections. And so in addition to the $15 million, which is not entirely in base, $10 million is in base, $5 million is in another policy option package, POP 101, so a little bit off there as well. It's not $15 million in base. It's $15 million total in both base and POP 101. We add to that $43.5 million to bring it up to the total $58.5 million projected to be saved by House Bill 3194 in the 2015-17 biennium. There is also an adjustment that was made in the process of developing the agency's budget that backfills some of the ARRA funds that were originally used for administration. So administrative overhead that is no longer available from ARRA funds. I mentioned the adjustment that needs to be made, that $5.7 million of federal fund additional limitation to allow for ongoing federal grants. And to compare the governor's budget with the co-chair's framework, we don't have a lot of detail on the co-chair's framework, but it appears that the difference would be primarily that the governor's budget provides $58.5 million of general fund for the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, and the co-chair's framework, as I understand it, would provide $20 million. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to take any additional questions.
Just a few.
Senator Winters?
No, I just...
But you might want to comment on that.
Just said that's about 38.5.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Is that all we have from BAM?
That is.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So, Linda, colleagues, any questions for these before we jump into public testimony? Linda, you want to tee up how we will handle public testimony?
In OLIS, there are 9 displays that are posted from people interested in providing public testimony. Obviously, we have more than 9. Here's the list.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, because you've got an hour.
Yeah.
So we can go ahead and start.
Good. Be sure so that we can try to keep your testimony concise so that we can make sure we hear from everybody and we don't have to have them cut into more testimony tomorrow or require other people to come back. So let's start with Multnomah County. Could we please bring up Commissioner Judy Shiprack and Kevin Cameron, and who's not from Multnomah County, but we'll hear from him anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Judy Shiprack, Multnomah County Commissioner, and I'm the co-chair of Multnomah County's Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. And I'm here to strongly support on behalf of the LPSC and on behalf of my colleagues in Multnomah County, the full funding of justice reinvestment, the grant program created by House Bill 3194. House Bill 3194 and the Justice Reinvestment Initiative grants will save taxpayers an estimated $600 million in prison costs over the next decade. But in order to achieve these cost-effective outcomes, full funding of community supervision strategies proven to reduce crime and victimization is crucial. Multnomah County launched its Justice Reinvestment Program in July 2014 and has already reduced the number of offenders sent to prison by 140 during the first 7 months of operation. The county has saved $4.9 million in state general funds and $8.5 million in anticipated savings in 1 year. This does not include millions more in anticipated savings. We're really breaking up. Well, am I blasting you guys too much?
No.
Okay. Well, I will back down a little bit from the microphone. It doesn't include more millions more in anticipated savings in short-term transitional leave and reductions in lengths of stay in prisons. As you know, House Bill 3194, passed by the 2013 legislature, modified sentencing and reserved Oregon's prison space for the most serious violent criminals while dramatically cutting prison costs through investment in local public safety systems. Your commitment, the legislature's commitment, to reinvest millions in these systems shows the dedication to prevention strategies that reduce crime and recidivism and improve public safety in innovative ways that demonstrably work. In order to achieve the full aspirational goals of your action last session in 3194, it is crucial to maintain the commitment to reinvest in these systems, and your commitment shows your dedication to these prevention strategies. They have to be continued to achieve the anticipated result. It's simply not enough to just change incarceration policies. Without meaningful and long-term justice reinvestment funding, we will not be successful in curtailing prison growth and will be forced to build a new prison sooner and at much greater cost. So again, I ask for your support for full funding of justice reinvestment initiatives with $58.5 million for the 2015-17 biennium so we can continue to make our community safer.
Good testimony. Commissioner Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. I'm resisting the temptation to say good afternoon, colleagues. It's great to see your smiling faces and really appreciate the work that you're doing here in this subcommittee. Marion County Commissioner Kevin Cameron, you've got my written testimony, so I won't go into all the details that are in there, but I want to come here and encourage you. In the 2013 session was one of several of my colleagues that are sitting here that supported House Bill 3194 on the House floor side. I've served on the Governor's Reentry Council since 2007. And Co-Chair Shields and I sponsored several pieces of legislation together back in 2009, I believe, 2007, 2009, that have helped with reentry legislation. I just want to say this, that I believe that if you read the testimony, there's a couple of programs that we did in Marion County, one of which was a Senate Bill 416, was a demonstration project on the diversion of prison population here in Marion County. And 18 months of that, the rate of population for recidivism is 11.5% compared to a statewide average of 24%. Also here in Marion County, we started the SOAR program long before 3194, which is an educational program where we take high to mid-risk offenders and put them through a program which is actually housed on our community college. And we did that with other funds and federal grants. And that particular program and other things that we've been doing in Marion County have been recognized by the U.S. Bureau of Justice Assistance and for our prisoner reentry. In 2012, the recidivism rate in Marion County was 36%, and in 2014 was 14%. And I just want to stress the fact that as somebody who voted for this bill back in 2013, I did that because I understand the public safety, I want to say this, the funding balloon. When you push on one side, it pops out the other side. So I strongly urge you to make sure that the monies that is being saved through these programs is reinvested back into public safety, whether it's through the education of offenders coming out or the parole and probation of offenders, that we use it in good programs that have been proven to reduce the recidivism rate. And you can tell by the facts that are up on the previous screen from the criminal justice group that it will make a difference in the future. And I want to thank you again for your hard work, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Good testimony. Thank you both very much. Any questions for this panel? All right. Next up, could we please bring up Rod Underhill? Mr. District Attorney, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Senator Shields. Rod Underhill, Multnomah County's District Attorney, also a member of the Oregon District Attorneys Association and member of the Executive Board of the ODAA. I'm looking at a letter back in July of 2013. Hello, Senator Winters. Pleasure to see you.
Hello.
Back in 2013 in July, the Oregon District Attorneys Association was very proud to write and release a letter on behalf of our support of working closely with others, to include Senator Winters, Co-Chair Williamson, and other members of this distinguished group, as we put forth a very, very serious and comprehensive sentencing effort. I want to read a couple of sentences from that letter that we released back in July of 2013. It reads, Oregon District Attorneys are also firmly committed to working with our partners to continually improve our criminal justice system. In that spirit, we have joined with Governor Kitzhaber and legislative leadership to support House Bill 3194. It goes on to say that House Bill 3194 makes targeted investments in vigorously tested community programs that will reduce the number of offenders who fail supervision and return to prison. This will only further protect the public and control prison growth. In addition, House Bill 3194 establishes a new and much more independent process for continuing this public safety discussion into the future with the establishment of the Public Policy Institute, Justice Reinvestment Committee, and Reentry Court Steering Committees. CJC is a critical member of that partnership. I want to go on to say that the Department of Corrections, and as you've heard, the Department of Corrections and CJC has let us know that costs saved and costs avoided for the biennium of 2015 through 17 is projected at $58.5 million. As shown by the slides, the investments made by the legislature into that 2013 Justice Reinvestment Fund, along with the implementation of those sentencing changes, has put us on a new path of not having to open the medium custody facility in Deer Ridge anytime in the near future. Had we not engaged in rigorous, meaningful conversations in 3194 resolution, it would have been a completely different conversation that we'd be having at this point. Instead, the costs that we have saved can be reinvested back into our communities. We know that to be sure that the investments are made into smart, targeted programs, CJC will be continuing to perform outcome analysis of specific promising programs with 3% of that justice reinvestment allocation being set aside for the rigorous evaluation of programs. In summary, 3194 is working. It can continue to work. The Oregon District Attorneys Association and myself as Multnomah County District Attorney are committed to continuing what we started back in early 2013 and before. We were brought to the table. We were very much appreciated being brought to the table, and we worked hard with everybody. And together with ourselves, the ODAA, I'm glad to see Kevin Campbell here from the Chiefs of Police, and I think going to say a few words on behalf of the sheriffs. All of us came to the table and embraced House Bill 3194. We're making it work. The statistics are showing it's working. We're saving the state millions and millions of dollars. And we hope that that justice reinvestment continues so that we can carry on into the long-term future these changes that we're making. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Not a question, just a comment, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Winters.
Just a comment, because I want to thank you for the role that you played in the negotiations to get us help get us through to bring 3194 to the table so that we could vote on it. And it you know, I personally it was some hard meetings, but thank you, because you know, you provided that leadership from the District Attorneys Association to help us move forward with it. And I don't know if I didn't get a chance to tell you during our deliberations, but I personally want to thank you for the hard work. I don't know how, if individuals understand bringing all entities together to try to get this monumental piece of legislation through took a lot of give and take on all parts. So I just want to thank you, Mr. Deering.
Thank you, Senator Winters, and I cherished our working relationship as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. District Attorney. Karen Nibbler, please.
Hey, Senator Shields and Representative Williamson and committee. I represent Karen Nibbler, excuse me. I represent the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and we have about 1,000 members in 17 different communities that I'm speaking for. And we have been quite enthused to learn about the Criminal Justice Commission and their work, and we've been following them for several sessions and usually come and support them for their budget. We have positions that encourage support for adult corrections, and we favor the use of alternatives to incarceration and the treatment programs. And in this case, we're particularly interested in supporting this Justice Reinvestment Fund because we think that trajectory needs to be changed. Instead of sending people into the prison system, we need to be working with them more in the communities and have these treatment programs that work. We think punishment alone is not the answer. And we strongly encourage your funding for this program. And I know a lot of people say that you should fully fund it, but I realize that you're going to have negotiations over the amount that you might be able to put into it. But I would encourage you to put a considerable amount, because you're not going to change that trajectory unless you put a certain amount of money up front to get these treatment programs going and the local programs going. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Questions? All right. I assume the next three are probably on the same panel. Can we bring up Chris Hoy, Rick Schiffner, and Ashley Baker?
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. I am Captain Chris Hoy with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. I'm the Community Corrections Director there in Clackamas County, and I'm the President of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors, and I'm speaking on their behalf today. The Community Corrections Directors have been full partners in 3194. We have diligently worked to ensure its success by implementing new and innovative initiatives designed to manage offenders in our communities and provide a long-term alternative to prison by reducing the risk to reoffend while holding offenders accountable. The short-term transitional leave program has saved over 42,000 prison bed days while utilizing only 1,075 for short-term sanctions during that leave. The short-term transitional leave program has worked well and by all accounts is a great success. Around the state, clients have received services including transitional housing, mentors, alcohol and drug treatment, employment services, as well as GED services that were not previously available to STTL clients, short-term transitional leave. New and innovative programs around the state have created the infrastructure necessary to ensure the success and create quality programs that provide a meaningful and effective community supervision option. Courts are more inclined to allow community supervision when meaningful programs exist. Examples of these efforts include an evidence-based decision-making model in Yamhill County, where all of the community justice partners came together and examined their system and developed the Early Defendant Analysis Program. This program consists of an assessment to help prosecutors, defense attorneys, and judges make evidence-based decisions about nonviolent presumptive prison cases. This innovative program has resulted in 485 prison months saved. Yamhill County had a goal of reducing prison utilization by 6%. The actual result of this program so far has been an 11% savings. In Deschutes County, the Justice Reinvestment Program consists of a probation officer who supervises all of the transitional leave cases, the AIP cases, which is Alternative Incarceration Program cases, and a percentage of downward departure cases. They have built a database that is tracking certain performance measures. Anecdotally speaking, they have had some success with a very high-risk person on the caseload who would have been voted one of the most likely not to succeed. But she did indeed succeed. She was able to get her license back, gain employment, stay clean from drug use, and most impressively, distance herself from a long list of known drug users. Outcome measured data is still being collected. In Deschutes County, they have received 24 short-term transitional leave offenders, equaling approximately 1,247 prison bed days saved. Of those 24 offenders, they have had just six violations. Jail sanctions included time for drug use and drinking. In their alternative incarceration program, since January 2014, they've had 27 offenders with zero violations. And that has reduced prison bed days by approximately 2,052. And they currently have 42 downward departure cases. A downward departure case is someone who might otherwise go to prison, but is being supervised in the community. And they have had the same degree of success there. In Jefferson County, they have implemented gender-responsive groups and culturally responsive groups for Native American males, as well as another group for all offenders who are incarcerated at the Jefferson County Jail. If a client is in jail on the days treatment is provided, they're going to they will have their class inside the jail, even if they're just there for a short sanction. This is done in partnership with the local treatment agency and the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office. For a large number of the Native American men, this treatment is the only treatment they are exposed to while on supervision. It's provided a good transition into outpatient treatment for others when released from custody. In Tillamook County, they've restarted a GED program. The instructor teaches approximately six incarcerated individuals and five supervised offenders every week. Two people have passed their tests so far, and they're excited to have reached an attainable goal that was otherwise not possible due to lack of money. This opened a wider range of employment where they can achieve, they couldn't have achieved without their educational certificates. In Hood River County, funding has allowed them to hire a dual diagnosis treatment provider in-house. They had a serious gap in service that their local A&D mental health provider could not meet. They are now available to get offenders assessed within a week of intake, where they were seeing waits of over 1 month from the local provider prior to that. Although they don't have numbers yet, they know that the longer the client remains untreated, the higher the propensity for relapse and or continued criminal behavior continues. They now can offer one-on-one treatment services in groups as well. This program is in its infancy, but they soon will add a cognitive behavior program to the in-house treatment provider's curriculum. In Clackamas County, we invested in housing for offenders on short-term transitional leave, as well as providing a peer mentor and a probation officer for community supervision. In addition, we increased capacity for both men and women in our inpatient alcohol and drug treatment programs, and it's reduced critical wait times from months to weeks or days. And we ensure that every person releasing from prison in Clackamas County has a place to live for at least the first 90 days. We're very proud of that. Nobody goes homeless in Clackamas County when they're coming out of prison. And they're also assigned to a peer mentor. As you can see, Community Corrections has been working diligently to implement 3194. And it is a great success. We appreciate the confidence and the investments that the legislature provided. We need your help to continue and expand this work. We encourage you to fully fund the governor's recommended budget of $58.5 million to assist our communities in fulfilling the promises made by 3194. And I'm very proud and pleased to be introducing to you Ashley and Rick. They are two current clients in our drug and alcohol treatment program, and they're here to tell you their stories.
Great. Would you like to go first?
Okay. Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it. My name is Rick. I'm in Clackamas County Drug and Alcohol Inpatient Program.
Rick, could you say your full name for the record?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Rick Andrew Schiffner.
Thank you.
And I'm in the Drug and Alcohol Program out of Clackamas County. And I'm really grateful to be there. You know, before I went into the program, I've been supervised out of Clackamas County for a little while, for a while now, about 4 years. And, you know, I struggle with drug addiction, heroin, and, you know, I got out of jail. I'd go to jail, get out, get sanctioned, and, you know, I'd just go right back to the streets and back to using. And, you know, I bounced a lot back and forth from California. I have no family up here. And I'd end up back here and, you know, committing crimes, you know, stealing and, you know, selling drugs, robbing people, whatever I could do to get my drugs, you know. And I got introduced to CSAP, the Drug and Alcohol Program out of Clackamas County. And, you know, I was really afraid to go in at first. I had really bad trust problems with authority, and you know, so it was a new thing for me to kind of go in there. And yeah, I went in there. I was willing to give it a shot. You know, I knew what was going on for me wasn't working, so I was willing to give it a shot, and I did. And you know, this program, it's life changing. It really is. This is my second time in there. First time I went through it, it really opened some doors up for me, but I didn't take a full look at what was going on inside of me. You know, I stayed clean for 18 months. My first time through there, I got introduced to some peers there, grew some really close friends. And the transition out of there, I transferred into Clean and Sober Living. I came back, I relapsed, used for a few days, and I ended up coming back. My probation officer was like, you know, well, maybe you need to go back there. And I agreed. You know, I knew the program worked. I've seen it. I've seen evidence. You know, there was just a few deeper things that I needed to work on within myself, and I understood that. And now I'm back there today, and I'm taking a deeper look at that, you know. And it's some serious stuff. You know, I the therapists and the counselors and all the help I'm getting from the staff, you know, and it's amazing. It really is. And I'm coming up on my 6 months clean this month. And just the, you know, our mentors through the program and stuff like that introduce us to meetings for once we get out of there. And they prepare us for transitioning. And, you know, I'm just really grateful to be in that program today and what it has done for me. You know, I got my license through them. You know, if I ever had any problems, you know, I have somebody to talk to. And, you know, I'm dealing with a little bit of deeper rooted things in my life today, and I appreciate that. You know, I've came a long way from where I was in the very beginning, and it's evident. You know, like I mean, I was homeless. You know, and I never thought I would get there. I grew up in a very good family. I never thought I'd be homeless, anything like that. You know, and that addiction progressed very fast. You know, and I have a relationship with my family today. You know, I have a very close relationship with a lot of guys in the treatment center. You know, the supervisors there. You know, it's like a friend. It's a friendship, and some people I grow close to. And I just wanted to express how grateful I am to be there and say thank you. You know, I know that all of you have a big thing to do, a part to that you you know, place in that. I just want to thank you all, and yeah.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Take it one day at a time.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
All right. True. Ashley.
Ashley, excuse me, Ashley.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley Baker. Good afternoon, and thank you for listening today. A little bit of my background. I'm 30 now. I've dealt with addiction issues since I was 14, with one drug or another. It started with opiate painkillers and became heroin over the years. Even though I was a pretty equal opportunity abuser, I would pretty much abuse any drug that was put in front of me. Heroin was my drug of choice. The drug abuse the abuse basically led to a really deep-seated criminality for me. I did things in my abuse and in my addiction that I would never have done had I not been using. Things that I still really struggle with how to forgive myself today. I stole from anyone and everyone that would allow any sort of vulnerability. I would con people every day, scam people, make them think I was innocent and that I needed help so that I could find some weak chink in their armor where I could take advantage of them. Eventually, petty crimes led to more major crimes. Petty thefts became theft ones, identity theft, breaking and entering, crimes along that line. And they were never things I would have done had they not been directly correlated to my drug abuse. I tried to get clean many times in different, what I call spin dry programs that only, kept you for 30 days and kicked you right back out into the wolf's den. And for someone who has 15 years of addiction under their belt, you don't fix things like that overnight. It took all that time to make the damage, and I needed more time. This program, where it's a 6-month minimum inpatient treatment, is helping me so much with how to cope effectively with past traumas, helping me pinpoint the errors in my thinking, because before, where I thought these were all outside issues, problems with everyone else, I realized it was the problem within myself, within the way I think. If I think and believe that I'm a failure and that I'm not good at anything but being a drug addict, then that's exactly what I'm going to choose to do with my life. I see now, with the help of the staff and with my peers in this program, that I do have a future, that I am in the driver's seat of the way I think and the way I live my life, and there's hope for me. I don't have to be the person that I thought I was going to be inevitably. When I was using at my worst, which was only about 4 months ago, I had been living on the streets for approximately 2 years off and on. People who knew me would cross the street to avoid me. I had no more contact with my family. I abandoned them more than they ever abandoned me. I didn't want to be looked at by forgiving and loving eyes because I didn't think I would ever get the help I needed. I didn't think change was attainable for me. I slept on the streets in the cold. The only thing I cared about was my bag of dope. And eventually it landed me a stint in prison for about a year. I watched my sister and my best friend both die of overdoses, and neither of them were fortunate enough to be given the opportunity I have in a program like this. I do believe this program is saving my life, is in the process of saving my life. I owe everything to it, and I'm incredibly grateful to be there and not in prison, where I'm not working on myself, where I'm surrounded with people as sick as myself, because I've been there, and it doesn't always help. And so today I have a relationship with my family. Today I am hopeful about my future. Today I really do believe that change is attainable. It's just gonna be a long road and a lot of hard work, but I'm willing to put it in because I've done that for my addiction, and my addiction didn't serve me at all. So that's all. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for your testimony. It's incredibly important that you guys came down here to put a face to the type of dollars that we're talking about. Thank you for doing so.
Sure. Thank you.
Representative Williamson.
Thank you. I want to thank you both for coming down as we worked through changing the way we think about justice reinvestment and where we put our dollars. It was exactly folks like you that I had hoped we would invest our dollars in. And so, Ashley, not keeping you out of prison and investing our dollars this way in you is so much more powerful and just makes so much more sense to me. And I am very proud of you guys. So thank you for the work that you're doing to help inform folks in this building that this is where I think our money needs to be going.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Good
thank
stuff.
You.
Could we please bring up Kevin Campbell, Sybil Hebb, and DJ Voigt?
Sister and best friend.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm used to dioceses with three.
That's right.
Chairs.
Chair Shields and Williamson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. They were not able to be here, but this is a very important issue for them. I've submitted my testimony via email, and so I'm not going to repeat it. There's three quick points I'd like to make, especially in light of what we just heard from Rick and Ashley. We have looked at the financial benefits of making these kind of justice reinvestments. So financially, we really do believe this is working. But I want to add that redemptively, I believe this is working. It's the kind of thing where for lives that now can be enjoyed, as opposed to lives that are difficult, challenging, and tragic, that's a good result. there's also a reduction in victimization when that happens. And so we really do feel like the investments in 3194 are incredibly important, and we want to continue to work collaboratively with all of you to make sure that we continue to keep that working. I'd like to make two other quick comments. The other is that, interestingly enough, and I was a part, had the privilege of being a part of that very difficult negotiation with many of you and D.A. Underhill and Jason Myers and others, and it really was difficult. So to be able to sit and actually hear good stories coming out of that hard work is rewarding. But another kind of side effect of this is the coalition now that is interested in justice reinvestment represents a very wide range of public safety perspectives. Perspectives, frankly, that disagree on other issues. But today we can gather and really support something that we think is powerful and is a great investment of money. But the final point that's kind of broader than this, because this is a criminal justice commission hearing. And so from just one stakeholder, I would like to say something about this agency. Michael Schmidt is leading this agency now. I want to let you know that we were thrilled that he was there. Craig Prinz did an excellent job. Michael is an excellent next leader of this organization, and already the organization, I think, is just continuing to build. But for both you and stakeholders like those of us in the audience here, our ability to view this agency as an agency of integrity, competence, and goodwill about Oregon is extremely important. You're making decisions about how you're going to invest dollars. An agency that can analyze and evaluate the efficiency and effectiveness of programs, that handle data in a way that a wide range of stakeholders can have confidence in, and most importantly, that you have confidence in as you're making your decisions, is important. I just wanted to testify today, and not just on 3194, because they do a lot of things, as they already put up on the board. They handle many grant programs, and they are involved in some really sticky criminal justice issues that we all want to continue to make progress on. And so I really wanted to take some time just to thank the commission for becoming a real credible entity in the state, and it's one we have to have, and they have to be credible. So with that, chairs and members of the committee, thank you for the time to be able to share today.
Thanks, Kevin. Sybil.
Thank you, Chair Shields, members of the committee. Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today to in support of investment in the crime prevention and safety services envisioned by the savings created by House Bill 3194. And I really thank you for your leadership in passing that bill and doing that hard work to move that discussion forward. I echo the comments of those that have gone before me, and I also submitted written testimony, but I wanted to just make one point. The Law Center, as you know, provides civil legal assistance to low-income people, and our mission is to help people achieve access to justice, and part of that is helping people to remove barriers so that they can move out of poverty. A significant percentage of our clients are people who are victims of domestic or sexual violence, and the fact of their victimization has forced them into poverty, or their victimization is really creating a cycle of trauma and violence that's really further trapping them in poverty. And so part of our mission is helping victims get the safety tools that they need and the prevention services that they need so that they can move forward in rebuilding their lives. And House Bill 3194 and the investments that are envisioned by that bill are a really critical part of that service for our clients. Without safety and safety planning, without a safe place to spend the night, without assistance in moving forward to get a restraining order, for example, or to help their children overcome the trauma perpetrated by abuse. Without those services, our clients can't move forward and be whole. And there have been incredible investments, which we thank you for, in the services for domestic and sexual violence survivors in our state, but we are still critically underfunded. And so the savings that are accomplished by 3194 and the reinvestments in those services are very important to us, and we really appreciate your prioritization of that discussion. And so from a crime victim and a crime survivor's perspective, we applaud and appreciate this work. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for this panel? All right, thank you. Shannon White, Gail Meyer, Kirsten Hadel. Oh, and DJ. Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Shields, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. Thank you for having me. I'm here representing the Oregon Business Association, for the record, DJ Vogt, Vice President Government Affairs, OBA. And I'm here to express OBA's support for the $58.5 million the CJC has requested for justice reinvestment. We support this investment because it embodies four basic principles that the OBA has always championed around public safety. And number one, it's safe communities. Our businesses require a safe environment to operate. Their employees need a safe environment. So we obviously prioritize safety. Number two, recognizing the interconnectedness of state budgets. Addressing corrections or public safety reform is necessary if we're going to tackle large goals in education, comprehensive tax reform, you name it. Addressing the cost curve in corrections is very important. Number three, controlling the size of the prison population, which is the driver of the main corrections budgets. If we can control the prison population, we free up cash flow to invest in other opportunities, and this is one of those opportunities. And finally, I just want to express our gratitude to this committee and the legislature as a whole for taking on House Bill 3194 in the last session. Really, it's a very, very positive step for the state as a whole and certainly in the public safety realm. And those conclude my comments.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Gail.
Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. We too want to applaud this committee and your predecessors, the commission, the task force, the committee in 2013 for the hard work you've done. Our association, we represent the clients that end up populating the criminal justice system. We see them at the time of the arrest. We represent them throughout the proceedings, and we see them as they get on the bus and they go through their adjudication and their sentence. We know that lying within our clients lies a Rick and an Ashley. You heard them today talking the full flowering of their development, but we see them as they've been crashing downward. We see them in their worst moments. And for all the hubris, for all the rhetoric, for all the aggression that they can express on the outside of life, when you get them in the first 24, 36, 48 hours of custody after an arrest, they're very, very, very crippled souls. Living very shattered lives. They would love in a heartbeat to trade their life away and go be a law-abiding citizen with a good job and a lot of family love and a good house and take their trash out. But the difference between where they are and where they would love to be seems like the difference to us between the moon and where we are from our backyard. So they look out at that and they think it's unreachable, and they rarely really get a sense that there's a next concrete step that they could take that would be helpful. So this is where 3194 has made such a change for our clients in their communities, both at the time of original adjudications for people to have the opt-out privileges of remaining in the community with services, or for those that do end up going to the Department of Corrections and then come back out early on a transitional leave. It's that undergirding, that foundation, the services, the housing, the treatment, the counseling that can literally turn their lives around. So it's something that it's a beautiful thing to unfold. I hope there's many more Ricks, many more Ashleys yet to come, but it comes only when there's really community-based services and treatment, and it will need the full funding and support of this committee. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you for your testimony. Shannon White and Kirsten Hadel.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Williamson and Shields, members of the committee. My name is Shannon White, and I'm the Deputy Director with Partnership for Safety and Justice. We're a statewide nonprofit advocacy organization that believes in a smarter public safety system, and we know I need my glasses. We believe that effective public safety requires being smart about crime by putting accountability first, providing crime survivors with the services they need, and supporting proven strategies to prevent crime. These values drive our work, which is why we're here in support of the $58.5 million in the Criminal Justice Commission's budget for justice reinvestment. And we want to note, as it started to be noted, that 10% of that funding goes to victim services, which we are really proud of. We fought alongside lots of the people here and others who couldn't be here today for the passage of House Bill 3194. And it's worth noting that we are the only justice reinvestment state in the country that has prioritized victim services spending. And, you know, over half of the states in the countries are doing some level of justice reinvestment work, but Oregon is the only state where we've made seen investing in community-based victim services a priority for having a strong public safety infrastructure. I think, as you've heard a lot from the people who've testified today, particularly the CJC themselves and community corrections, justice reinvestment is working. The data is new, but so far we're getting the results we need. The Criminal Justice Commission has developed rules to further monitor and ensure that we get the outcomes that we need for our state. And so we need to make this big investment. I think there's a lesson that's instructive in thinking about making what can seem like a big investment in public safety, but that is, I think we all know that in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, we deinstitutionalized the mentally ill, and the idea was that we would reinvest in community-based resources for them, and that never happened the way it was supposed to. And now we know that over 50% of the people in prisons and jails are mentally ill, and that's what happens when we don't get that initial, that initial investment so that we can build the service as we need. Longer term, we know that will be a more effective, cost-effective way to have public safety in our communities, but first we need this upfront investment. And so we ask that you support that $58.5 million. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, and members of the committee. My name is Kirsten Heidel. I am the Youth Services Coordinator for Center for Hope and Safety, formerly Mid Valley Women's Crisis Service. Can you hear me okay? We are an agency that serves victims and survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. We've been around since 1973, so we're one of the oldest organizations of its kind in Oregon. And I'm here today just to urge you to support fully funding the justice reinvestment in the Criminal Justice Commission budget at $58.5 million. This funding is so incredibly important to victim services programs, domestic violence and sexual assault agencies. We are constantly underfunded, and what we have been seeing is a huge increase in the demand for our services. In Oregon alone, 37% of women have experienced physical violence, rape, or stalking in their lifetime. So that's a really large population that we have affected by intimate partner violence. At our agency, we have 11 full-time staff members, and we provide services like a 24-hour crisis hotline. We have a safe shelter, provide support groups. We help out with court, filling out restraining orders, different things like this. And with the 11 staff members, we provide all these services. PSU did a study and on our advocates and services, and they found that just to provide the amount of services just for crisis intervention, just answering the hotline, you need 30 advocates to provide that services, and we're operating lower than that. We do have 3 additional co-located advocates that are outstationed at DHS Self-Sufficiency and Child Welfare, and this has helped tremendously in building those collaborations and providing public safety. As the youth advocate, I provide not only services to adults, but obviously youth, and a lot of that can be meeting one-on-one, but also there's this community education piece that also factors into it. We really focus on prevention. So I go into middle schools and high schools and throughout the community, training service providers on the dynamics of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault. And just in the over 4 years, I've trained about 25,000 people just in Marion County alone. And that has also contributed to the demand for our services because people have more knowledge about intimate partner violence. And so we have seen a really big increase in our services needing that. And this community education, it really, if we want to stop violence in our communities, it really starts with that prevention piece. And we're really fortunate that we have a wonderful collaboration with our district attorney's office, our sheriff's office, and this is working together. It's creates just a those life-saving services and contributes to public safety and in our communities. I just really urge you to fully support this investment, and it really saves lives. It makes a really huge difference, and I just want to thank you for all of your hard work on House Bill 3194, and thank you for your time. And if you have any questions, I feel free to. Thank you.
Good testimony. Any questions, this panel? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Colleagues, we have DOC and the military department tomorrow. Anything else we need to know, Linda?
I think that'll do it.
All right. This meeting's adjourned.
I'm going to touch you.
All right. This meeting's adjourned.
I'm going to touch you.